Today's shiur is Daf Memtes. We will begin on Daf Memches on the base, 8 lines from the bottom. Yesterday, at the end of the shiur, we were discussing various situations where things are connected, and the shaila was, are they connected for tumah, that if one part becomes tumah, the other part becomes tumah or not? Tana Rabbanus, we learned in the Braisa, Mispira Shel Prokim, scissors made of two pieces, scissors whose blades are made to be separated. V'izmel Sharetini, Izmel Sharetini is the blade and the handle of a carpenter's plane, and it's made that the blade should be removed from the wooden handle. Chibul Tuma are considered attached as far as Hilchas Tuma concerned, then Chibul Hazah, but are not considered attached as far as the halacha of sprinkling the para aduma ashes, which when something becomes tamei, that's how it becomes tahar. Ask the Gemara, manafshach, ichibahu, if it's considered a connection, then afilo hazar nami, it should be considered connected even as far as hazar. On the other hand, ivlav chibahu, if it's not considered connected, afilo tamanami loy, it should not be considered connected as far as tamei either. Amar Rava, so Rava answers, Devar Torah, Midai Raisa, Bishas Malacha, while the scissors or the plane are in use, they are considered chibur, a connected, Bein L'Tumma, as far as if one part gets Tamei, the other part becomes Tamei, and Bein L'Hazar, that if you sprinkle on one part, the sprinkling would work on both part. V'Shloi Bishas Malacha, when they're not in use, and chibur loy l'tumah v'loy l'hazar, they're not considered attached, not as far as hilchas tumah, not as far as hilchas hazar are concerned. V'goz rabbonin, however, chazal v'goizer al tumah shloy b'shas melacha, regarding tumah, even that happened when they're not in use, b'shem tumah shb'shas melacha. Since when they're in use, if one part gets tamei, mid the rice, the other part gets tamei, Chazal made a gzera that even when they're not connected, they should become tamei. For hazar shebishas melacha, and hazar and sprinkling that should work when they're in use, mishum hazar shloi bishas melacha, that people may come and use, be makel, even when they're not in use. So first of all, Tosfos makes a point. He says that we learned the Gemara twice. And the last parak spoke about a mukhni, a wheel connect to a carriage, and quoted a Mishnah Masech de Kalim that said it depends if it's removable or not. And here we seem to have different rules as far as things being considered one or not. Tosfos says there's a difference, but he doesn't identify what the difference. The Sfas Emes makes a very interesting observation. He says that we have a scissor made out of two parts, and we're saying now that if one part becomes tamei, the other part automatically becomes tamei. But if you sprinkle the mei para chatas on one, it won't work for the other. As the Sfas Emes, what will be if they're separated, but you did a hazar on the part that actually touched the tumah? And the part that did not touch the tumah, you did not do the hazah on. What will be the halacha? So the Sfas Emes says that we're still machmer, and we would require a hazah on the part that's separate, even though it did not become tumah, even though it never touched tumah. However, the Sfas Emes points out that the Rambam may disagree, and the Rambam says that the part that didn't get tamei should, if it's disconnected and also never touched tumah, may not require hazar. Tosfos asks, why didn't the Gemara ask the same question that we just spoke, the question that we're talking about by scissors or by the plane, why didn't the Gemara ask the same question by the shlal shakaifsim that we discussed yesterday, when you have a bunch of pieces of clothing that are stitched together, that the Gemara never contemplated that hazar on one should work for the other? So Tosfos answers that a shlal shakaisim is the chibur, the connection is not midaraisa. It's only midrabanan. So since it's only midrabanan, the Gemara never had a havamina that the hazar one should work for the other. And Rekiva Eger answers Tosfos' question with a very nice insight. He says that a scissor made out of two parts, it makes sense to believe that the two parts are connected, because the two parts have to go together. You can't use one part without the other. That's why the Gemara is considering, since they're so linked together, the hazar on one part should work for the other. However, by pieces of clothing that are just stitched together for convenience sake and doing the laundry, there is no reason to consider them connected. And the Gemara would never have a havamina that the hazar of one part should work for the other. Continues the Gemara. Bezman Shein Lachem, we learned in the Mishnah, in the second group of pieces of types of material that are used for insulation, that when are they moist of hevel? Bezman Shein Lachem. Only when they're moist, not when they're dry. Iboilhu. So they asked the following shayla. Lachem machas atzman, when the Mishnah discusses moisture, does it mean it's moisture from their selves, natural moisture? Or perhaps it means even when they're moist because of an external factor. So the way Rashi learns the Gemara, moisture, natural moisture, gives off more heat than moisture from something else. Unlike the Sfas Emes points out, why did the Gemara have a havamina that when the Mishnah says lachem, it should make a difference if it's natural moisture or external moisture? So it says because the Mishnah uses a lashon bezman shehein lachem, when they are shehein. So the Sfas Emes says, why did you say shehein? It should have said bezman shelachem or lachem. What if the bezman shehein? That's what led the Gemara to believe that the Mishnah may be discussing specifically a case when the moisture from themselves, not from an outside source. Tashma, loy b'tevin v'loy b'zagin v'loy b'muchin. The Braisa says you're not allowed to use straw, grape skins, grass, v'zman shein lachin, when they're moist. Izma mit b'shlamim lachin machim stava acher, that they get moist from something else. Shapit, it makes sense. Eli amit lachem achos atzman. If we say moisture always means self-moisture, muchen lachen machem atzman hechem ishkasla. How could you have felt that's naturally moist? Says the Gemara, you could have it. Mimir to the bani atmi. If you took the wool from between the thighs of the sheep, there it's damp, and that would be natural moisture. V'hod the Tanya Rabbi Yishya, and this is what Rabbi Yishya said. You're allowed to insulate with a dry piece of clothing, or Paris Yuvation with dry produce. Not with moist clothing. Not with moist produce. Is again, if we say lacha, moist, means natural moisture, how is it possible to have natural moisture on a piece of clothing? Says the Gemara, it's possible. It's possible when the clothing was made from wool that came from the thighs of the sheep, which has a lot of moisture from the sweat. So, the way we learned the Gemara, natural moisture gives off more heat than external moisture, and the Gemara doesn't know what the moisture of our Mishnah means, and since we're dealing with a Shaila d'Rabbanan, Sofak d'Rabbanan l'kula, and we're makel that only natural moisture of these materials would be asur for Hatman. The Rambam has a different pshat in the Gemara. The Rambam says that external moisture is certainly considered moist. The Gemara's shaila is natural moisture also considered moist? And the Rambam the Rambam Taka Paskins that Tsai natural moisture and Tsai external moisture both will be considered moist, and will be prohibited. Because according to Rambam, external moisture is certainly usur, and natural moisture, the Gemara seems to be finding situations that are also considered hot, and that's why both will be usur. Continues the Mishnah. Time to b'ksusar peiris. One may insulate with clothing, with produce. Tosfos right away points out that our Mishnah seems to be arguing with what Rav Oshia said a moment ago, because Rav Oshia said that clothing and produce sometimes may not be used. Bekan fiyoina, dove's feathers, u benesayrish shel charshim, carpenter's sawdust, u benurish shel peshtendaka, with fine flax combings. Miyuda oisa bedaka, he says, you're not allowed to use fine ones, or mata bedaka, but you're allowed to use coarse ones. We'll talk about this in the Gemara. The Paiskin point out that when it says, there's a machlokes when it says feathers of a dove, what does it mean? Does it mean only the hard feathers, but the soft feathers would be prohibited, or would it include even the soft ones? The Ramah seems to feel that even the soft feathers would be permitted to be used. So since the Gemara spoke about feathers of a dove, the Gemara goes into it. Amar Rabbi Yanai, tefillin tzrichin gufnaki, when one wears his tefillin, he has to make sure to keep a clean body, kelisha bal knafayim, like Elisha, who is called the person with the wings. So first the Gemara wants to know, mayhi, what is it meant when we say you have to have a clean body? Abaya Amar shlo yafich behen, person has to be careful not to pass gas while wearing tefillin. Rava mishlo yishim behen, you have to be careful from falling asleep. So Rashi says, why you have to be careful from falling asleep? Because while you're sleeping, you may pass wind or experience an emission. Tosfos says that we're not worried that while you're asleep, you'll have an emission, but we are worried that you'll have Hesach Hadas. The Tosfos also says that when Abaya says that you have to be careful not to pass wind, and Rava says you have to worry that you shouldn't fall asleep, what Pshat is that Abaya also agrees that you're not allowed to sleep in tefillin. Just Abaya is saying, I'm not going to disallow you from wearing tefillin on the outside chance that you may fall asleep. Because people normally don't fall asleep while they're wearing tefillin. Another shaila is when we say that you're not allowed to sleep in tefillin, and that's what you have to be careful about. What kind of sleeping are we talking about? Tosfos says, we're talking about both Shinas Arai and Shinas Kva, whether it's a temporary nap or a full-fledged sleep. However, from the Gemara Masechta Sukkah, it seems that we only are referring to a Shinas Kva. A full-fledged sleep would be also while wearing tefillin, not a Shinas Arai. And the Mefarshim explain, what is this Shaila dependent on? It's dependent on the following issue. The halacha, as we just learned, is that you're not allowed to be masiach das, you're not allowed to lose attention while you're wearing tefillin. Now the question is, what does hesach das and tefillin mean? Does hesach das mean that you have to be thinking about the tefillin all the time, and if not, it's considered hesach das? Or does hesach das mean as long as you're not thinking about something else? The man, the Amr, who says that you're not allowed to even sleep a shinas aroi in the tefillin holds, that you have to be thinking about the tefillin all the time. So if you're not thinking about the, so if you even have a shinas aroi, obviously when you're taking a nap, you're not thinking about the tefillin, and it would be asr. The man, the Amr, who hold that only a shinas kva is asr, they hold that you don't have to be thinking about all tefillin out all the time. You're just not by thinking about something else. And that's why only Shinas Kva is also not Shinas Aroi. Continues the Gemara. V'mai Karlei Bal Knafayim. Why was he called the one with the wings? Shepa Machas Groza Machas Roi Me'arish Egzera Yisrael. One time the Romans made an edict against Klal Yisrael. Shekol Amnich Tefillin. Whoever wears Tefillin Yenakrus Moichai. they would have his brains gorged out. And Elisha would wear them and go out to the street. An officer saw him. Elisha ran away from him. And the officer pursued him. When he got to him, not in the Rosha, he took him off his head, and he was holding them in his hands. What's this that you're holding in your hand? So Elisha answered, dove's wings. He opened up his hand, and what was found there? Dove's wings. That's why it's called Elisha of the dove wing, of the wings. Why dafka dove's wings versus any other birds? Because Kla Yisrael is compared to a dove. Shenemar, as the pasuk says in Tehillim, kan fe yoyna nechpa v'kesef. The wings of a dove are covered with silver. Ma yoyna knafer meginas aleh. Just like a dove, its wings protected. Af Yisrael mitzvus meginas aleh. So to a Kla Yisrael, the mitzvus protect us. So Rashi says that what makes a dove different than all other animals? A dove uses its wings rather than its beak to fight off attackers. So too, Klal Yisrael don't use natural forms of defense. They use the mitzvahs to defend themselves. Tosfos says that what makes a dove different? That all other birds, when they get tired, they need to rest. A dove, when it gets tired, it flaps, it uses one wing and rests the other. So to Klal Yisrael, they say, never stop. Even if they're not doing one mitzvah, they could do another mitzvah. And the Mefarshim say, that's why from here, since tefillin are compared to dove's wings, and Tosfos says that the two dove's wings are considered separate, so too we bring a proof that the tefillin shel yad and the tefillin shel rosh are considered two separate mitzvahs. And therefore, the halacha is that even if you can't wear one, you should wear the other. Now Tosfos asks, why Elisha was allowed to remove his tefillin when the officer was chasing him? The Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin says that when there's a decree, an anti-religious decree, somebody is mechuyev to be meisa nefesh, to give up his life to fulfill the mitzvah. So since this decree of the Romans was directed against the observance of the mitzvah tefillin, Elisha should have continued wearing his tefillin even though it was dangerous. So there are many different answers. Many Rishonim distinguish between a decree against the mitzvah asay versus a decree against the mitzvah lois asay. When is there a chiyuv to be moisa nefesh? Only by a lois asay, not by an asay. And tefillin is an asay. Dritva says that since the chiyuv to wear tefillin, the obligation to wear tefillin, is only once a day, and you don't have to wear the tefillin the rest of the time, and that's exactly what we do. So, therefore, once Elisha wore the tefillin that day already, he's not mechuyev to do anything more. The Sfas Emes says a very interesting answer. The Sfas Emes says that the Gemara, we will learn later in this Masechta, says that Rabbi Yeshua would remove his tefillin before entering the house of a certain noble woman because he felt that it was proper to wear tefillin, the holy tefillin, in an unholy place. So as the Sfas Emes, the same thing here. Elisha took off his tefillin in front of the soldier, the officer, because he considered this person unholy, and you're not allowed, as we learned in the Gemara, you're not allowed to wear tefillin in an unholy place. With that Sfas Emes concept, we can answer another kasha. Because Tosfos asks, the Gemara uses Elisha as the model of a person who was always careful to remain clean when he wore his tefillin. Ask Tosfos, where do we see that Elisha was careful about being clean when he wore tefillin? So Tosfos answers, it must be that he kept himself clean, because otherwise he would have never had such a great nais happened to him if he wasn't always careful with the wearing tefillin. But with the Sfas Emes' vart, Tosfos' question is certainly answered. The whole reason Elisha took off the tefillin Well, because he was careful about wearing tefillin only in a clean place. That's why Elisha could be the paradigm of somebody who wears, who is careful to be clean when wearing tefillin. On the other hand, some Rishonim asked the question that if the halach is that you're not mechuyev to give up your life to do a mitzvah, there's a machlokes Rishonim if you're still allowed to. The Rambam says you're not allowed to. So if we're saying that this was a mitzvah asay, that you're not mechuyev to give up your life for under any circumstances, so how was Elisha allowed to put his life into danger by putting on the tefillin? So some Rishonim say that he didn't realize that he would be caught. Other Rishonim say that even the Rambam who holds that you're not allowed to give up your life when you're not supposed to, will agree that when there's a situation where people are weak in a certain mitzvah and you want to strengthen them in that mitzvah, even the Rambam will agree you're allowed to give up the life. And this was the situation over here. They explained that Elisha saw that tefillin was, the mitzvah of tefillin was weak, and he tried to show them how strong tefillin should be. The Mefarshim also point out, why did the Romans make this horrible decree about anyone wearing tefillin would have his brain gouged out? What was the point? So Mashah says, because the Pasuk says, the Gemara Masechta the Brachah says, that all the nations of the world will see that the name of Hashem is above you, the Yom and the fear of you. And the Gemara says, how do they see that? Elu tefillin shebarosh, when we wear the tefillin shebarosh, and that's what the Romans couldn't accept, and that's why they were so against the tefillin. But I saw along the same line a vort from Yoshe ben Salvechik. He explains that in wearing tefillin there are two mitzvahs. One is that we have a mitzvah to put on the tefillin. Another thing is that we wear the tefillin, as those who say the l'shem yichud before they put on tefillin, l'shabed gufi u'moichi. We want to subjugate our bodies and our mind l'avoid sibarach shmai, to the avoid of Hashem. The Romans, when they saw a Jew wearing tefillin, said, this Jew, by wearing the tefillin shebarosh, is saying that his mind is subject to Hashem and not to anyone else. And they said, no, you're our servants. You can't be servants of Hashem. And if you want to subject your mind to Hashem, we will not allow it. And that's pshat in the bracha that we make every morning, Oita Yisrael Bisfara, that a Jew is glorified with a tefillin, that so that we subject ourselves completely to Hashem. It's interesting, the Paiskim say that because of this Gemara, where we say that the tefillin are compared to the wings of a dove, that's why when we wrap the tefillin, we wrap them on the two sides of the backs, they should look like wings of a bird from this Gemara. But there's a minig, the Divrei Chaim brings down a minig, that in the tefillin shel yad, some people don't wrap the ritzuas on both sides of the backs, because on one side of the backs there's the kesher that's on the tefillin shel yad, which looks like a yod sticking out, and we don't want anything to be on top of Jews. We don't want anything to be on top of a yod on top of a Jew. Nothing should be on top of us. We should always be on top. The Mishnah continued, b'nesayrus shel charshin, we can use carpenter sawdust or fine flax combings. Rav Yehuda said fine ones are usher, coarse ones are mutter. So they asked Rabbi Yehuda and the Sayyid Shal Kachashin Koi. When Rabbi Yehuda is talking about, is he referring to the carpenter sawdust? That's where he makes the difference. I nourish a Pishnah Koi. Is he talking about flax? Tashma, the Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, Neurish a Pishnah Daka, the fine flax combings, Hare Kazevel, is considered like manure, which are mice of Hevel. Shema Minar, Amnur Shal Pishtenkai, Rav Yehuda is referring to flax, Shema Minar. Continue the Mishnah. Tomna B'Shalchin, one may insulate with animal hides, Umatapalin some, and he may move them. B'Gizet Semer, he could also use wool shearings on Erev Shabbos, it's not considered a double mice of Hevel. They Umatapalin some, but he can't move them because they're muksa. So kaitzer wise, so what should he do if he used them to insulate his pot? Neutlas a kisui, he removes the lid, vehein neutlas, and they fall. Lifting the lid causes them to slide off by themselves, and that's not considered moving muksa. Rabbi Lozman Azariah Omer, Kupa Maita Tzida, he tilts the entire box for Neutel, and he removes the food by pouring out what he requires, leaving the rest of the food in the pot for the next meal. But he should not lift the pot out of the box. Why? Shemi Yitoil, because if he removes the pot, then he won't be able to replace it, because if the shearings of both sides fall into the cavity, he will not be permitted to move them when he wants to put back the pot, because, as we just said, the shearings are muktza. The Chaimim Neutel Machzer, the Chaim say he can remove and replace it, which we'll explain in the Gemara. So the first observation the Beis Halevi makes from this Mishnah is that here we're talking about muksa items, and yet the Mishnah is telling us that you're allowed to have hanor from them, you can be used for insulation on Shabbos. From here he says that we see that the halacha is you're not allowed to move muksa on Shabbos, but you're allowed to have hanor from muksa on Shabbos. Now Rashi asks a very fundamental question. We said here that in the beginning of the Mishnah we have a lid with the muksa on top of the lid, and the Mishnah says you're allowed to pick up the lid and like which is supporting the shearings, and you're not considered moving muksa because you didn't actually touch the muksa. Ask Rashi, isn't this lid a basis ledavar aser? The lid is a basis to the shearings that are on top of this. So Rashi answers that the lid, the purpose of the lid is to cover the pot. The purpose of the lid is not meant to support something on top of it, and therefore even if you have such an item on top of the lid, it would not make it a basis ledavar aser. And the way Rabbi Akiva Eiger explains Rashi, we have to look over here what is the main thing and what is the subordinate thing. The main thing here is the pot with the food. The lid and certainly the shearings on top of the lid are only here to help support the pot on the bottom. So just because the pot is on the bottom doesn't automatically make it into a basis ledavar aser. Only when the bottom is a base to what's on top of it, and the thing on top of it is a davar muksa, then do we consider it a basis ledavar aser. However, the Shulta Gebayrim asks a very fundamental question. The Gemara, when it wants to use an example of a basis ledavar aser, always uses the case of a maniach even apiachavis, somebody who deliberately leaves a stone on top of a barrel. Now ask the Shulta Gebayrim, the stone, the barrel isn't there to service the stone. So according to the explanation that Rashi and Rabbi Akiva Eiger just gave, if the bottom isn't there to service the top, it doesn't become a basis. So why is an even al pi achavis considered the example of a basis ledavar aser? So the Rishonim answer that when does Rashi say that if the bottom is not there to service the top, it doesn't become a basis? There has to be one more condition. It wasn't intended to be there for the whole Shabbos, like our Mishnah. Nobody intended to leave these shearings on top of the pot for the whole Shabbos. They were only there to keep the pot warm until I want to eat the food. However, in a case where I intend to leave it there the entire Shabbos, there the bottom object always becomes a basis, even if it's not subordinate to the top thing. A stone on top of a barrel, there he intended to leave it, Hamaniach, he intended to leave it the whole Shabbos. So even though the bottom is not subordinate to the top, it will still have a din of a basis ledavar aser. Begins the Gemara. Yosef Rav Yonasan ben Achnoi, Rav Yonasan ben Alozer, Yosef Rav Chanina b'cham gabay, v'cham b'oilan. Shochen shebal bayis tanan, when we talked about hides in our Mishnah, were we talking about the hides of a private person who does not plan on selling them, and therefore he would not mind using them as a rug, and that's why they're not muksa. Avo shel umen, but the rugs of a craftsman, kim de kapralai, he intends to make them into utensils and sell them. Loy matatino de nalar be moved because they're muksa. Or maybe what the Mishnah meant was even the hides of a craftsman, the koshkin shabalabais, and certainly the hides of a balabais. Amalahu Rav Yonis ben Elazar mistabra shabalabais tanan. It makes sense to say that our Mishnah is speaking specifically about the hides of a balabais. Avla shal uman, the hides of a craftsman, a kapra layu, he's particular about them, and he will not let them be used, and they become muksa. However, Amalai Rav Chanina ben Chama disagrees, and he says, Kach Amar Rav Shmuel b'Rav Yosi, Abba Shalchahava, my father was a professional tanner, Vom Aviyu Shalchim and Neshvelim, and he would say, bring out the hides and we may sit on them. So we see that even a craftsman is not particular about using his hides. Ask the Gemara, Meisvei, it says in a Braisa, the Sarim Shabalabayis, the wooden boards of a householder, Batatlansa, may be moved in Amuksa. However, Vishal Uman, of a craftsman, ain't Batatlansa, you're not allowed to move them. Vichish of Aleim, Losses Aleim Paslarchim, but if the craftsman intended on Friday to serve bread to his guests on them, then the Aloch is Benkach Batatlan, boards belong to balabais or to umin, you may move them. So you see that there is a difference between a balabais and an umin. Answers the Gemara, Shani Nasarim, boards are different to kapralayu. Craftsmen are more concerned about boards than they are about hides. Toshma, Sama tries a different braisa. It says in a braisa, iris, hides. Ben avudim, ben shen avudim, whether they were tanned or whether they were not tanned, mutl tatlam shabbos. They may be moved on Shabbos, the Namuksa. Like Amr of Udim, where is there a difference between tanned and not tanned? Elal inyan tumal vad. Only regarding susceptibility to tumah. That the ones that are tanned are susceptible to tumah, and the ones that are not susceptible to tumah. My life, isn't the Braisa talking about? Loishna shabal bais, loishna shalumin. That hides are never considered muksa, whether they belong to bal bais, whether they belong to numin. Says the Gemara Loi, this Bryce is talking about Shabalabayas, only about Balabayas, but it could be by an Umin. There is a difference between that they are Muksa. Ava Shalumin Mai, so what's the Gemara saying? What are you telling me now? That the Aloch by Umin, a Metaklin, they may never be moved. Ask the Gemara, Yehochahad Tamu, that we said in the Bryce. That the difference between tanned and not tanned is regarding tumah. The Braisa could have gone deeper, and the Braisa could have taught us a halacha in muksa. Why do we have to bring a case of tumah? The Braisa say that even in muksa we can make a difference. The medvar mamurim when a hides non muksa b'shavah abayis av b'shalumen. The hides of a woman, loy, will be muksa. The fact that Braisa did not make this distinction seems to indicate that the Braisa holds that woman and balabayas tan hides have the same halacha, they're never muksa. Answers the Gemara, there's no proof. Because kol balabayas kamayri, this Braisa is only talking about the hides of a balabayas. The Braisa is not referring at all to the hides of an woman. Says the Gemara Ketanoi, this Shaila, if the hides of a Uman are muks or not, is really Machlokes Tanoim. Irish of Alabayas, the Braisa says that the hides of Alabayas, Metatlanoi son. Vishal Uman of a Krevsman, a Metatlanoi son. Rabbi Yossi says, Echadzeb, Metatlanoi son, both may be moved, they're never muksa. So it's really a Machlokes Tanoim. Continues the Gemara. How the Yasvi come about? So they had another question. How the Tnan? Well, we learned in the Mishnah. We'll learn about this Mishnah later in our Masechta. Av Ovis Malachos Aboim Chasa Achas. There are 39 Ovis Malachos. Kenegan me. Where do we get the number 39? Amalav Chenim Bechama. Kenegan Avoidus Mishkan. They correspond to Avoid in building the Mishkan. 39 Malachos were necessary to build the Mishkan. And like Tosfos explains, when you look at the list of the 39 malachas, Sometimes you see melachas that seem to be very similar to each other, and yet are considered separate melachas. And sometimes things that seem not to be similar are still considered one melacha, an av and a tolda. Why? What is the test? So the Gemara says the test is we look at what was done in the Mishkan. What was done in the Mishkan is an av, and what was not done in the Mishkan is not an av. Amar Rav Chanina bechama, Amar Rav Yonis ben Elazar, Kach Amar Rav Shimon ben Yosef ben Elkanya. Where we get the number 39? Keneg melacha melachta melachish b'tayra. And we count all the times the Torah uses the word melacha. It's abam chasa achas. You'll have it 39 times. And the Rabbeinu Chananel points out that truthfully, if you'll count the times the Torah uses the word melacha, you'll have more than 60 times. He says that some of those times should not be considered in the count. Now, Tosfos first brings down a point that even this mandama that goes according to the amount of times the Torah uses the word melacha has to agree that the Mishkan is the model for melacha. Because otherwise, how do I know which 39 things are melacha? But Tosfos doesn't like this pshat, because Tosfos says it seems from the Gemara that these two shittas are arguing. According to this explanation, the two shittas really agree. The Rashba, however, says that of course this shita has to agree that the model for malachas are the Mishkan. The question between those two shittas is, what did we learn from the Mishkan? The first shita holds that not only did we learn the actual malachas from the Mishkan, but we even learned the number from the Mishkan. And the second shita holds that we only learned the actual malachas from the Mishkan, but not the number. By Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef asked the following question. It says in Pasuk by Yosef, V'yava habayis solasis malachtoi. Yosef came home to do his work. That was on the day that the wife of Potiphar tried to seduce him. The question is, it says the malachtoi, minyanahu alai, is a part of the count or not? Amalei Abayis, so Abayis said, V'leis is Sefer Torah v'limni. Let's bring out a Sefer Torah and count, and see if we need it or not. Miloi Amar Rabba Babachana Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Then Rabbi Babachana say in a similar situation where they had a question how to define something, Loi Zozim Misham, Achevi Sefer Torah Monim, until they brought a Sefer Torah and count. So why don't we count? Amalei, so he answered, Kikam Sapkalei, his question was like this, Misham Diksiv, there's another pasuk. The pasuk says, "Vamalacha ha'isadayim." There was enough work. This was when Klai Yisrael was building the Mishkan, donating to the Mishkan. So the question is like this: "Miminyanahu, is that pasuk part of the count or not?" And the Gemara explains itself. If you'll say that "Vamalacha ha'isadayim" is part of the count of 40, ha. This pasuk, when it says "V'yova habayi salasis malachtoi," is command by malasit tzrach of nichnas. That Yosef really came in to live with the wife of Potiphar. But as Rashi brings down, as he was about to do the avera, the must yuknei shel aviv, he saw his father, and that stopped him from doing the avera. And therefore, this malacha doesn't mean malacha, and it's not part of the count. Aydilma, perhaps. When the pasuk says that Yosef came to do his melacha minyanehu, it's considered melacha, melacha mam, she came to do work, not anything else. For hi, and when the pasuk says for melacha isadayim, hachkam the shalom levitator, they stop bringing donations, but not that the work was finished. Teku, and the Gemara leaves with the question unresolved. So the Pnei Yeshua says, beautiful vart. He says that throughout Shas, when we refer to the Melacha Shabbos, we don't call them Lamites Melachas, we call them Aboim Chos Achas, 40 minus 1, which equals 39. And the question is, why don't we just say 39? Why do we say 40 minus 1? He says, but based on this Gemara, we can understand it. Because what we're saying in this Gemara is that we don't know, that we have 40 Psukim. Just one of them should be eliminated. I don't know which one. Either Hamalacha is a Dayam or v'yava yosef abayis alasim malachtoi. So there really is a boim. There is 40, just chos achas. We have to eliminate one. We don't know which one to eliminate. Tanya, so continues the Gemara, we learned in Ebraisa, command the Omer, k'neged avoydus ha-mishkan, that the lametes melachos correspond to the melachos that were done in building the Mishkan. The Tanya, ein chayovin ela melacha shekiyotz b'hoys ha-mishkan. We're not chayiv for a melacha, only one that was used in the building of the Mishkan. And the Bryce explains itself. Haim Zeru, they planted, Vatamoy Tizru, and you should not plant. Haim Katsru, they reaped in order to, Rashi explains, to make the dyes that were used for the Avoida, you too should not reap. Haim Hels Krosh Mikarakal Agola, they lifted boards from the ground, which was Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, to the Agol, to the wagon, which was Rosh Hashanah Yochid. V'atem lo tachnisim Rosh Hashanah Rabbim Rosh Hashanah Yochid. You also should not bring articles from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Heim haridus akroshim agol karka. They brought down boards from the wagon to the ground. That means from Rosh Hashanah Yochid to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. V'atem lo titzi Rosh Hashanah Yochid Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Heim haritzi magol alagol. They transferred from one wagon to another. V'atem lo titzi Rosh Hashanah Yochid Rosh Hashanah Yochid. You too should not transfer articles from one Rosh Hashanah Yochid to another Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Ask the Gemara immediately, Rosh Hashanah Yochid Rosh Hashanah Yochid, my covet. What aveira is being done when you're carrying from one Rosh Hashanah Yochid to another Rosh Hashanah Yochid? Abayiv rav v'damri tavayu v'yitemer v'adabar ahava. It's talking about a case a Rosh Hashanah Yochid Rosh Hashanah Yochid that you're carrying from one Rosh Hashanah Yochid to another Rosh Hashanah Yochid derech Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. And like the Mefarshim explained, that the wagons were not flush next to each other, rather in between the wagons, which were Rosh Hashanah Yochids, there was an empty space, which was Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and from here we see that you're not allowed to carry Rosh Hashanah Yochid, Rosh Hashanah Yochid, derech Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Tosfos asks, if so, that we see that they carried from Rosh Hashanah Yochid, from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to Rosh Hashanah Yochid, why is that not considered a melacha? And Tosfos refers us back to the beginning of the Masechta that said that Hachnosa and Haitza are really one and the same, and that's why it's not considered two separate melachas. The Eglei Tal makes a very important observation. He says, when Rashi explains Zoru planting, cut through cutting, he says that they used cutting and planting for the materials used for the dyes that were used for the materials in building the Mishkan. He asks, why doesn't Rashi say that they cut wheat and other materials to make the menachos, the carbon menachos that were made out of wheat, the oimer, which was made out of wheat and barley, why isn't that the example of cut through vizaru? So the Tal says, from here we see that the model for melachis are what's used in building the Mishkan, not what's used in baking carbon. The Pnei Yeshua asks that at the beginning of the Masechta we said that we know that there's an issa to carry in Shabbos because the Pasuk says Al Yetze Ish Mekoymoy, that you're not allowed to move, you're not allowed to carry things from your place. So why does the Gemara have to bring these concepts of carrying from Dagolus back and forth as the makar, as the source for the issue of carrying? We have a pasuk of Yetzi Ishma Mekoymai. So the Pnei Yeshua answers that from that pasuk, I only know you're not allowed to carry. But what is the definition of Rosh Hashanah Yochid? What is the definition of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? That I don't know. The Mishkan teaches us what are the dimensions and what are the measurements of Rosh Hashanah Yochid and Rosh Hashanah Rabbim.